You're listening to a Journal Watch podcast called Clinical Conversations. It's for the week of July 4, and it's podcast number 48. I'm Joe Elia. Call us at 1-617-440-4374 with help or suggestions, or write to jelia@nejm.org. This week we've got an interview with Professor Lurs Irwig of the University of Sydney. It's about his recent study on the usefulness of taking bone mineral density measurements after starting bisphosphonates. The quick take is, they aren't. But first, the briefest of looks at the other clinical news of the week. Details, you say? Well, all are available in Physician's First Watch or by following the links on the website, podcasts.jwatch.org. First, renin-angiotensin blockade does not forestall diabetic nephropathy. In fact, the ARB losartan seemed to accelerate it. Enalapril seemed to help retinopathy, though. Next, an FDA panel voted narrowly to ban Vicodin and Percocet. Yikes. You may have been getting requests for refills all week. It's not known yet whether the agency will follow its panel's advice. C-reactive protein isn't so great at assigning cardiovascular risk, it turns out, according to two JAMA studies. Finally, insulin glargine was associated with a heightened cancer risk in studies published in Diabetologia. The American Diabetes Association and the journal's editors were left scratching their heads and calling for more data, and fast. Now, on to the interview. An article in BMJ last week strongly makes the point that monitoring bone mineral density during the first few years of bisphosphonate therapy is a waste of resources, and worse, may be misleading and clinically harmful. The researchers did a secondary analysis of data that compared the effect of alendronate with placebo in women with low bone mineral density. They found little need for monitoring, since over 97% of those on treatment showed beneficial increases after 3 years. However, when mineral density values were examined within individual patients, they showed wide variation, reflecting the imprecision of the measurement. Professor Les Irwig, one of the paper's authors, has kindly agreed to talk with us from Australia, where he is a professor of epidemiology at the University of Sydney, where he leads the screening and test evaluation program in the School of Public Health. Welcome, Professor Irwig.
Hi, thanks for talking to me.
I hope I was reasonably accurate in my summary of your article.
That was a very good summary, thanks.
Okay, good. I didn't want to misstate the premise going in. One of the things that was mentioned in the article and in the commentary on it is that Americans have a lot of these bone scanners, and they tend to do density measurements. Would the scanners be better used, or would it be better for them to buy more accurate scanners? Or is it in the case that people shouldn't bother for the most part because of the predictable response to alendronate?
The latter, really. You're correct in identifying that there are two issues here, if you like, the signal and the noise. Mm-hmm. The signal is what's actually happening to bone mineral density over time when on treatment, and the noise being the background variability that, if you like, might happen if you remeasured anyone just within the space of a week or two. So having more accurate scanners or taking the average of multiple measurements will reduce the noise. But the main issue is that the signal from our paper essentially shows that there is very little variability in treatment response to alendronate. As you mentioned, over 97% of people will show a positive response at what most clinicians would see as a therapeutically relevant threshold.
And so in that case, it's almost futile. Well, it is futile, but it does no good. The danger of conducting those measurements is that people, I think you say in the paper, people may respond with a change in treatment as on the basis of those measurements. Is that right?
Sure. If you have a look at the apparent effect, in other words, what happens if you re-measure people, then there's a considerable proportion of people that would appear to have actually lost bone mineral density even while on treatment. We know from our results that this is simply a reflection of the noise in the measurement. They haven't actually lost, and therefore it would be a mistake to stop treatment. And likewise, it would be a mistake to assume that those patients who appear to have lost have been non-adherent to treatment. The issue of adherence to treatment is a big one for medications generally, and certainly for the bisphosphonates. But you can't use the observed measurements to judge whether somebody has actually been taking their medication or not.
And those drugs are not easily adjusted, are they?
Yeah, there usually is a standard dosage, and as we've shown, the variability in response is quite narrow.
And so once treatment has started, the only good it will do to measure bone density within the first 3 years is to reassure the patient that there is bone there, or that there is a measurement that can be made. But as you say, it's information best not acted on.
Well, it's information best not obtained, because clearly once you've done a measurement, the result may not appear to be something that you could tell the patient and reassure them on, because essentially some patients will appear to have decreased. We know that's not actually the case, but clearly that would be far from reassurance. So I think it's really an issue of making sure who needs treatment on the basis of their risk of fracture, but then not bothering to measure at least within the first 3 years.
Now, I think people worry about the other, say, 2.5% of people, the people who don't fall within the 97.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Are those people, would those people be obvious just through a clinical assessment?
No, I don't think they would be obvious, but when we talk about 97.5%, we're talking about, if you like, the usual sort of confidence limits that apply, and 95% of the distribution, 97.5% of the distribution is above an increase of BMD of 0.019 grams per square centimeter. So the remaining 2.5% are still likely to have increased. In other words, they're still likely to have been above zero.
I see. So I'm just worrying on behalf of all the people who might be listening, mm-hmm. saying, "Well, gee, I don't know about this." Well, so now we know what not to do in those first 3 years of therapy, Professor Erwig. But now, what about later in therapy, or later in the course of one's management of these patients? Do those densitometers come in handy then, or are they still best left in the closet?
Well, clearly we're in the difficult territory of trying to understand what would happen in a time period beyond the data that we've got, so that's a difficult question
okay.
to answer.
Fair enough.
The same issue applies generally, in fact, to treatment of osteoporosis long-term generally, where we don't really have the extremely long-term trials that would be necessary to assess that.
I see. Well, what do you think clinicians should do with this information?
Well, I think the clear message is that osteoporosis is treatable. Treatment should be started on the basis of an assessment of people's fracture risk, and there's several calculators available from osteoporosis organizations to assess that. The features that go into the fracture risk assessment include not just the bone mineral density, but also age and gender and menopausal status for women. I think attention should be shifted to wise use of those and detection of people who are at appreciable risk of fracture, and treatment of those individuals, and helping patients to adhere to treatment dealing with side effect issues and questions about side effects, but not remeasuring their bone mineral density as part of that assessment.
I see. Have you had any strong reactions to your findings from either colleagues there or people with densitometers, say, in the United States, who really like to use them?
Well, I think the main comment which we've had relates to the adherence issue. Because a lot of clinicians would be feeling that the additional measurement would be useful to ensure or promote patient adherence. I mean, clearly, having shown that the measurements are too unreliable to be used for that purpose, we don't think that's a good idea. And there are other ways of dealing with adherence, which essentially include direct conversations with patients about the need for treatment, discussion about side effects they may be having, and support. So not doing the measurement doesn't mean that clinicians shouldn't see their patients. They should, but to talk to them and discuss issues with them, rather than doing measurements which may mislead.
Well, that seems very good advice. What is next on your research agenda? Can you talk a little bit about that?
We're very interested in the issue of monitoring for many conditions, and in fact, we've had some recent work also within the BMJ looking at monitoring for patients on treatment for high blood pressure, again with similar results that the measurements are very variable, and therefore monitoring intervals can be considerably lengthened beyond what is usually recommended. So we will be looking at all conditions to decide this. The other issue is that the result that we've spoken about is specific to the class of drugs, the bisphosphonates, mm-hmm. and it could well be that the variability in response is different to other drugs, and clearly that needs to be assessed both in the case of bone mineral density as well as other issues such as cardiovascular risk factors. The issue of clearly monitoring for chronic conditions consumes vast resources. So in addition to ensuring high quality care, there is potential for saving resources and shifting them to areas where they will do most good by rationalizing monitoring of treatment.
Well, I want to thank you for your time with us today, Professor Erwig, and we'll look forward to your next set of studies.
Good. Thanks so much. Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, you're quite welcome. We're all ears here at 1-617-440-4374. Give us a ring or drop me a note at jelia@nejm.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Ilya. Join us next week. Enough said.